commentary program. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of Dale Jackson, his guests, and callers. They do not represent the views of Cumulus Broadcasting, its management, or this station.
I am doing this not to agitate you, but to save you from the doldrums of your own self-imposed inadequacies. You're welcome!
It's live. It's local. It's the Dale Jackson Show. On News Talk 770 AM, 925 FM, WVNN, WVNN.com, and on your smartphone on iHeartRadio.
All right, News Talk 770 AM, 925 FM, WVNN, News Time 707 here on your Friday morning. And then, like we do every single Friday, we invite a bully in here to bully me. State Senator Arthur Orr comes into the studio. Senator Orr, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been called a lot of things, but not a bully.
Been called a bully.
Well, being, I'm going to push it a little bit and say I'm 5'9". Okay. That's being a little, that's stretching it a little bit. But anyway, 5'9", people that are 5'9", can't be bullies.
Well, I'm about 5'8", 5'9", and I tend to bully people around a lot. You know, the funny thing is, call you a bully. As I said that, I kind of thought to myself, man, you've been all over the world helping people. It'd be pretty interesting if you were, in fact, a bully for all the things that you have done. But you ever had to deal with bullies in your life? We were talking about a list. I don't know if you heard it, but there was a list put out by a Nebraska school, and it was horrible. It was like, don't tell on your bully. Don't let the bully know you're hurt. Don't respond to a bully. All these like horrible things that it was telling these kids not to do, and everyone got very upset about this because, again, the advice is freaking awful. Have you ever had to deal with a bully in your life?
I can't recall. I guess back in the neighborhood, there were a couple times when I knew I would be on the losing end, but by golly, I was going to hurt them on the way down. They were bigger and older and stronger, but, I had a moral victory in exerting pain.
Any kind of victory you can get, I guess that's a moral.
Absolutely.
People often say there's bullies in the legislature. There are people who are going to utilize their power or their position to lean on you. I don't know if bullying's the right term. Maybe forceful people in the Alabama legislature. Are there people there that get pushed around?
Get pushed around?
Yeah, well, and obviously, in order to get pushed around, there's got to be people who push people around. Are there people down there who operate under that dynamic?
I guess there are some that are more pliable than others, but that's just the way it is in life. You know, some people are more, you can convince them or they'll go along to get along, and then some are complete jerks, and they're just intransigent, even though they know perhaps – after they start thinking about it, that their original position is wrong or very, very weak, they'll just dig in just because and being stubborn. And so, but that's, you find that everywhere.
Yeah, and that was my point earlier this morning. I said, the bigger point is that this is the kind of stuff you have to deal with your entire life. This is not something that goes away in ninth grade or goes away when you go to college or goes away when you go anywhere else. You run into these people who are going to attempt to bully you throughout your entire life, and you need to figure out a way to deal with it in one way or another. So,
well, and that's, interestingly, the legislature is similar to the practice of law. And, being in the legal world and having practiced in courtrooms, a lot of that is intimidation, one lawyer against the other, or one team of lawyers against the other, plaintiff or defense. It doesn't matter. Both sides do it. And by the same token, that happens in the legislature. I'm trying to strong arm others, whether it's on a party line basis or ideological or whatever the issue is. You find that happening, and, again, being in the law prepared me for a lot of that, a lot of those tactics.
Interesting. Very interesting. Let's talk about the legislature here for a second. We haven't had an opportunity to talk about it at length. I've been out of town doing other things. How do you grade the legislature? I mean, I know you're in it, so you're sort of a skewed person to be asking that to. But grade the legislature's performance over the last few months.
Well, you you try to discredit me before you ask me, but that's okay. You know, all I know is, you know, I'll be honest, and that's all I know to do or be. I would say, you know, the expectations were low this session because it is an election year. I think that sets a tone across the legislature. The standoff with Governor Bentley on the education budget was also a large, I'll call it a distraction, probably not a good word, but a lot of, you know, it sucked a lot of energy and momentum that out of the room. And then, you know, I'd have to say Representative Wren's plea deal at the end of the session, and a lot of rumors and whispers throughout it, but his plea deal and the precursor that may mean for other situations. The grand jury was summoning people down to Lee County with subpoenas to come testify. So all that's going on during the session. So with those in mind, I would still give us a B+ or a solid B, again, with a lot of impediments and a lot of headwinds that we were facing during the session.
Yeah, I talked to Governor Bentley, and I asked him a similar question, and I talked to him at length about the deal at the end. Can you walk my listeners through what exactly happened at the end of the legislative session where Bentley, where you guys passed the Education Trust Fund, Bentley was prepared to offer up an executive amendment for a 2% teacher pay raise, and the legislature, at least the state senate, said, nope, we're done, and took off. I mean, that's my take on it. Let's hear what yours is.
Well, the couple things. In the last day of the session, both bills had gone across the both bills were in play. The general fund had already gone across the street. So it was with the governor, had been sent over several days, legislative days previously to the last day.
Mm-hmm.
However, we knew he was perhaps going to make some amendments on that bill, some executive amendments to it. The Education Trust Fund budget was down in the House. It's a Senate bill, but it was down in the House for concurrence with the conference committee report. And that was the grand bargain that, you know, supposedly, depending on who you talk to, was struck by the education budget chairs and the Senator Marsh and Representative Hubbard to fully fund PHIP and then make the rest of the money go to repay the rainy day funds and go to the proration stabilization fund. So that's down in the House. And when the House took it up, Dale, there was very, very little opposition, no filibuster, no expected fight by the Democrats. And so what happened was it passed pretty quickly, and it's about 6 or 7 in the evening, somewhere in that time frame, you know, late afternoon, early evening. And so they passed the education budget, and when that happens, it'll come back to the Senate. And when the bill is at the Senate for transmittal over to the governor, immediately upon receipt to the Senate, he can put an amendment on the bill. And so that's the reason Pro Tem Marsh decided very quickly, once that bill was walked up to the Senate and ready for transmittal, it was ripe for being amended. And the governor's legislative liaison was in the back of the chamber walking around and had been for several hours
waiting
with a white sheet of set of papers, and presumably that was the amendment he would want to put on the budget. And that's in fact what he was doing. You know, he came out afterwards, yep, he had the amendment and was ready to do it, to put it on the education bill. And at that time, the House had adjourned, and there was no way to override or to take any legislative action, and it would have stuck. That amendment would have stuck on the budget and changed everything.
And had he got that through, I mean, you guys would have had to vote that down, right? I mean, if
we couldn't have. That's the thing. The House had already adjourned.
Oh, because the House is already gone. So, okay, I got you.
Regardless of what the Senate does, the House had adjourned what we say sine die, which, you know, once and for all, you know, gone, not to come back. And, you know, so the Senate could have overridden it, but it was moot, and the amendment would have stuck. So that's the reason, again, Pro Tem Marsh had to hurriedly adjourn us permanently so the amendment wouldn't be walked down the aisle. And the Secretary of the Senate had told us as soon as it's in his hands, it is deemed received, and, you know, it sticks.
Are you surprised that Governor Bentley did that? Are you surprised he was ready to do this? I mean, I understand he's got a re-election. I don't think anyone's worried about it. But are you surprised he put that up there and put the legislature in that position? Because, and we'll talk about this on the other side, I talked about it with Cam Ward yesterday. We'll play that interview at 8 o'clock. I talked with Cam Ward, and I said to him, I said, there were a lot of things that died because of this. You know, a lot of bills that died. I mean, would you agree with that premise?
Well, there are always, let me reemphasize, always bills that die on that last day, or, you know, and a lot of times they're good bills that were on a calendar or an agenda for the day, and we don't make it to them. The either chamber gets hung up on a bill. So to say, you know, this was an extraordinary occurrence. No, there always are good pieces of legislation that just don't make it, but they're in position that last night or last day to pass. But for whatever reasons, something happens, some filibuster starts, and people start lining up to speak, and you can't break the filibuster, and things just, you know, just don't happen that you want to happen.
Do you think Governor Bentley knew that would happen if he did this, or was Governor Bentley sort of using his bully pulpit there to hope to force your guys' hand, or was he just playing politics?
Well, you know, he said weeks prior to this final night, you know, a lot of politics going on in Montgomery and that kind of thing, and I think with a smile. So, you know, you'd have to ask him. You know, listen, there's no doubt. I would assume almost, if not all, every legislator would love to have given a teacher pay raise. That's not, you know, it's not like a good versus bad thing. It's a situation where our fiscal responsibility and the law that we passed establishing this proration stabilization fund, that's where the funds were to go. And we ended up, you asked me on this program, you know, was a portion of that bill, that 2011 Act, was it broken? And to repay the PACT program, that's the PACT, you know, the prepaid affordable college tuition plan, which went bust several years ago, to start making those payments and to pay back rainy day fund. We did, you know, use some of those funds from the proration stabilization fund. But then the rest needed to go there. Governor Bentley wanted to use them for a pay raise, but that would put us right back where we've been, Dale, for decades now.
Where you said
just
you didn't want to be.
Just being whipsawed with proration, you know, years of proration and back and up and down all around with, you know, good years and lean years. And that's the reason we passed that 2011 law to prevent that.
Okay, so we saw what happened there at the end. Governor Bentley, I don't want to say he left the door open for a special session, but he essentially did. Do you think there'll be one?
The only thing I think that would bring us back is tremendous revenues, and we are down in revenues for 2014. We're tens of millions of dollars in the hole right now this year.
Is that on projections or is that on last year?
No. That's on projections. Okay. That's what we have budgeted to spend. We're tens of millions down in 14, which carries us into 15 and causes big problems.
So is there proration around this corner?
I wouldn't say that because, again, we took the fiscally conservative step to address it if 14 doesn't pan out like we thought, and we wind up late September $30, $40, $50 million in the hole in 14, we'll have some funds to offset that and go into 15 with a clean slate.
Okay, we'll take a quick timeout. We'll go more with State Senator Arthur Orr. We'll have a conversation with him about some of the other stuff that happened there in the legislature. We talked about the end. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the race for governor, Parker Griffith, ripping apart the Tea Party. We'll talk a little bit about that, too. Stay tuned. Live, local, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, News Time, 728. We're way long in this segment. This will be a short segment. I got a quick question for you, Senator. Thanks for being here.
As long as you don't bully me.
Now, widows in Madison County kicked off of the health care because of Obamacare, the cost and the whole bunch. There's a longer story to it. I don't know if you've seen it. It was suggested to me yesterday that they could potentially find a way to put them on the state's health insurance rolls. They're already on like the RSA and all that other stuff, which isn't really a state entity, but is a quasi-state thing. Is that a possibility, or is that a non-starter?
Well, I think, you know, one thing is true. If you pass legislation to allow it, as long as it doesn't violate the state constitution, it could be. And most of your counties are in participants in SEIB, which is the State Employees Insurance Board. And they actually, we had a bill that came through this last session that allowed them to have their own kind of management. The plan would be managed by SEIB, but the whistles and bells on the plan would be managed by a city and county type board. Not they have no representation right now at the SEIB.
I think
it's a possibility, particularly if you pass legislation, which would probably be required to do something like that.
Would you support something like that?
I'd have to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's two dozen people, but I imagine there's other around the state. So,
you know, people come out of the woodwork when things like that, you know. And again, you don't want to hurt them, but you'd have to look at it, the numbers.
All right, there you go. It's a possibility, but we'll have to look at it more with Senator Orr when we continue. It's the Dale Jackson Show, live and local, right here on WVNN.
It's live. It's local. It's the Dale Jackson Show on News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Listen live online at WVNN.com and on iHeartRadio. Depend on it.
All right, News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN News Time. It is 7:37. Here on your Friday morning, I'm Dale Jackson. The phone number is 1-866-494-WVNN, 1-866-494-9866. In the studio with us, as he joins us every single Friday, we have State Senator Arthur Orr is here with us, and we appreciate him being here. Senator Orr, good morning.
Good morning, Dale. Good to be with you. Ready for the Easter weekend, and hopefully they'll find some money in those eggs out scattered around on Sunday morning.
And maybe we'll give that to the state. The kids will put it in an envelope and send it down to the state government.
I would say that's pretty doubtful, Mr. Jackson.
I know I wouldn't
I'm not going to be standing by the post office box waiting on the money coming in from Easter egg collection.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk about elections. We talk about the session a lot. Let's talk about the elections. We got elections right around the corner in reality, and you got to ask yourself, what is the AEA doing? We are now, what, June 3rd or June 6th or something along those lines? Early June, you got a primary. They're supposed to be getting involved in Republican politics, but, man, it is pretty quiet. Bill Holtzclaw has an opponent. George Barry, haven't heard anything. I'm not saying he would take AEA dollars, but I haven't heard anything out of that election. Mike Parsons is running against Mary Scott Hunter. Haven't heard really anything there. David Blair's made a little bit of noise over some other issues, not necessarily the race with Paul Sanford. I mean, I'm thinking about the Republican primaries that are going on right now here in North.
The race right now up here is, you know, as far as money and mobilization, is the Steve Livingston versus Todd Greeson in that Senate District 8.
Shadrach.
Held by Shadrach McGill. And in the redistricting process, I had the district that I represent had to shrink considerably. And so that gets into the South Parkway area now, into the Chaffee School area, Farley School down there in South Huntsville. And
Greason took $50,000 from the AEA, right?
He did some time ago. He made.
And by the way, that's not shadow money or dark money. That's straight up AEA money. It's an odd thing for a Republican to do. And he's a House guy.
He is a House guy. He's been a, you know, I don't know about a loyal vote, but he's been a consistent vote for the AEA through his term in the House, is my understanding. I hadn't looked at the vote sheets, but. The $50,000 donation would indicate that they have a lot of confidence in his continuing that reputation in the Senate if he is elected.
Can you win as a Republican and do that?
We'll see. You know, I know that you have two different counties, you know, Greason being from DeKalb County and Fort Payne, and then you have Livingston being from Scottsboro and Jackson County. DeKalb having a little bit more population, but Steve is married to a Huntsvillian, and a fair amount of the district is Madison County, so about 20% or so. So as far as votes, 15-20%. So that'll be that race is getting watched very heavily. Now that the session's over, I think you'll see a lot of the business community aligning behind Livingston. Knowing that Greason's no longer there in the House. So, you know, we'll see whether Livingston, as far as the donation starts picking up, you know, BCA and Alpha and other type endorsements coming his way to you know, counterbalance the AEA being behind Greason.
Are they interested? Is the BCA interested in that race? I mean, it's a state Senate race.
They're interested in every race. So, yeah, that's one, again, that they're – probably going to get off the fence now and start playing in with donations. Again, wanting a business-friendly candidate. Livingston owns a small business there in Scottsboro and has for years, and, you know, I would assume is the more business-friendly candidate than Greason, who I think worked for the two-year college system for years. So we'll see.
Now, with Greason and Livingston, and this is to the east of our listening audience goes that far, but are we going to start seeing, and you mentioned it goes down South Parkway, it's the Huntsville media market, so if he's getting $50,000 from the AEA, and Livingston's going to get some money from the BCA and the other conservative type interests who are maybe kind of about the AEA working its way into the Republican Party, I mean, you could see a lot of ads there.
Oh, yeah, I think it will heat up here, and of course, Greason has a public record as an office holder. Livingston does not. First time to run for office, just a concerned businessman wanting to get involved in a conservative way for our state. And so, you know, his first time that I know of is running for office, so no record there. But you'll start seeing some big money being spent in that race, and a lot of it will be driven by polling numbers, but Your listening audience will see more and more of that one.
Mary Scott Hunter just sent a tweet that said, agreed. I'll read to you exactly. She said, agreed, the big race in this neck of the woods is the Livingston-Greason race. I hope for her sake she's right. Because I don't want it to be the Mike Parson, Mary Scott Hunter race, which I don't think it is. I think that's a one-issue race, and I think that issue is kind of dropped off the table, if you ask me, but that may be just me. The AEA votes. Okay, you're down there in the Alabama legislature. You're down there. You know who the AEA voters are. You know who the AEA reliable votes are. You know who, if you're going to have an issue that's against the AEA or the AEA is against, I guess would be a better way to say that, you know you're going to have to work those people over. Maybe this is a little too soon to be asking, but who you got here?
On
the Greason-Livingston race.
It is tightening up. I think Greason originally... being better known.
I'm not asking you who you're choosing. I'm asking you, who do you think?
Who do I think?
Yeah.
If the business community gets behind Livingston and really works that race, I could see Livingston winning. But again, the early favorite would have been Greason. But the polling numbers I've seen gives Livingston a real chance and a real shot at winning this. there are Democrats awaiting in the general in this same district, so it's not over after the primary. But it's going to be a tight race, and if, you know, Livingston is outworking and stuff, he's got a real good chance of winning. If and it is expected that the business community galvanizes behind him with support, because you know where Greason's going to get his support.
Lowell Barron, can he play a role? The former state senator, longtime guy. He's been there forever. Won a write-in campaign. I mean, this guy, he's been over there for a long time. I know he lost. He's got some black eyes and a broken neck and all this other stuff from some stuff going on. But black eyes, metaphorically, broken neck, actually, from falling off a tractor and stuff like that. Can he play a role in this election if he wants to get behind, say, a Greason, which I think would hurt him more so in a Republican primary, but maybe in a general, he would get behind the Democratic candidate?
You know, my sense is that he's kind of done with politics, but we'll see. He may, you know, a lot's going to determine what happens in the courtroom. You've got a jury still out there, not impaneled yet, so you want to be careful of not isolating or impacting potential jurors if he takes the stump for one candidate or the other. Those jurors would come from DeKalb County, of course. So, again, I think you lay low until the courtroom situation and that charge is settled. You know, with the appeal, you know, that case, interestingly enough.
For those who don't know, just real quick, for those who don't know, it's a corruption case, essentially. He gave money to a former aide who they say he was sleeping with. At the end of the election, he gave her a car as well and a giant bonus, and people are kind of making that question. I also saw the other day Thomas Scoville linked to a part that said he gave $500,000 to some attorneys.
Right. He had about $500,000 in his campaign account that was there after the election where he went down to Shad McGill and in 2010. But he's used that now for legal defense. And, of course, that case is now up on appeal because the trial judge ruled that any use by the prosecutors of any type of physical relationship with Ms. Johnson could not be used in the courtroom. And so the prosecutors say that guts their case, so they've appealed it up to the Court of Criminal Appeals. So we'll see where we go with that one.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that fall out of the case because that's a big part of this.
It could be a big, very big part. And so, you know, again, DeKalb County jury, that's still hanging out there. I don't see Mr. Barron getting involved in
Let me ask you a campaign question on that issue. So he's sitting on $500,000 plus because he gave her a car and some other cash too, and then $500,000 elsewhere. He's sitting on all that money. He's in a hotly contested race. He loses. Why was he sitting on $500,000? If you had $500,000, what do you do? It's not like if he won, he couldn't get more.
Let me share with you. In tracking, going back to September and October of 2010. That was not a race that was targeted for a real pickup. We thought maybe, just maybe, there was a chance, but it would be a real long shot. But as we continued to poll it, we saw Shadrach McGill pick up more and more traction, and his numbers kept going up and up. And so then more and more resources were dedicated to that, to the McGill campaign. And then, as you know, he won in the end, not by a lot, but he won. And so, you know, I think, you know, again, I don't know what Lowell Barron was thinking, but you had to think he thought he had it and that he would win it in a squeaker or however, and that additional $500,000 wouldn't be needed. He'd just be wasting it. And, of course, we've passed a lot of laws since then to prevent spending that money, giving that money to other campaigns, and we've really tightened the laws considerably.
So what should he have done with that money at the end of that election? At the end of that election, what should he have done with that money?
After he lost?
Yeah.
You know, you would have to perceive perhaps he thought he could get back in politics. Some politicians, you know, give it to start a scholarship fund or whatever. Some, you know, return it to the donors. I don't know what he was thinking he would do with it after we really tightened the laws. No PAC to PAC transfers, no giving to other candidates from your campaign account. So The noose really tightened on what you can do with those campaign funds.
And we'll see what happens in this court case with Lowell Barron and the Attorney General and all these other things flying about. Again, the more tightening of the noose on the campaign finance, I don't know if the public really cares. I don't know if they really want to see who gave to what and all this other stuff. I don't know if they really care, but I know I care. And I know the press cares. And they love to have the story. So we'll continue to see those things change. All right, let's take a quick time out. We'll come back more with State Senator Arthur Orr. It's the Dale Jackson Show, live and local, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it. All right, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, News Time, 7:55 here on your Friday morning, talking with Senator Orr about the election. Senator Orr, thanks for being here. Let's talk about the biggest issues. You don't have an opponent, but what are the biggest issues, both in the Republican primary and in the general election? What are going to be the biggest issues they get thrown out? Let's start the primary. If you're a Republican with a primary opponent, what's the biggest issue that your opponents are going to try to beat up on? And I understand it'll change from race to race, but just generally.
I can tell you what concerns the voters the most. And right now, it is still the economy and jobs. People are concerned about the future and about, you know, their employment, about prospects for jobs and job growth, and what are you going to do to help bring more, you know, more employment here to your particular district or your area. Closely related to that are, you know, is people wanting a quality education for the school children, and how are you going to ensure or try to provide a quality education for you know, for our young people and going forward. And I think one of the steps we took this session didn't get a lot of press or a lot of media, but it's ramping up our efforts in workforce development and to ramp up the track for those who probably will not be going to college, and getting them tied in with the junior colleges to enhance their skill levels, or with corporations and businesses to prepare them for the workforce. And if we can get a cadre or get a reputation of having well-trained, well-skilled workers here in the Tennessee Valley, it will really help us recruit good-paying businesses to come to the area and help, you know, everybody wins, you know, whether you're selling, you know, widgets or, you know, have a store, or whether, you know, you're a doctor, lawyer, you know, retail business, whatever. If we've got businesses coming to this area, providing good paying jobs, that's a great thing for everyone. And so that's certainly what we want.
If education is the issue,
one of the issues, you know, but it's a key. It's one of the top issues for sure.
By the way, I just got told 150,000 total for Greason at this point from the AEA.
Yeah, I thought he'd received some.
I hadn't seen any
additional funding.
Right. If education is the issue, here's what I'll hear: Alabama Accountability Act. Is that a liability for Republicans? I saw an ad the other day, 52 students, $40 million. I know that number's not accurate anymore, but it was against Senator Phil Williams, a Republican in another part of the state. They said 52 students, $40 million, and they had a coin with it rolling from a public school to a private school. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
No, I have not.
I'll tell you what, not a bad ad. I mean, if you want to remove objectivity and reality from it, it's not a bad ad. How scared should Republicans be of that?
Well, again, the Accountability Act, there was a bill to modify it somewhat, and I think that bill had some concerns and questions, some good, some bad, you know, some good points in the bill, some not so good that needed changing. We'll have to see how that pans out. But that, you know, we don't have a lot of failing schools up here, Dale, like they do in other parts of the state. And you know, our public schools up here are by and large, very, very well run and do an excellent job at delivering education. But we need to raise the standards, you know, and that was the big common core debate, you know, how do we get there? How do we do it? But, you know, we can't accept the status quo. And after those two bigs, the economy and education, you have other things that come along, you know, whether it's illegal immigration, accountability and integrity in government, other issues popping up. But those usually are the two big ones that we see in the polling data.
It's going to be an interesting election year. I'm glad we'll have you here to break all of this stuff down with us. We appreciate you coming in. State Senator Arthur Orr, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Always a pleasure to be here. Look forward to next week.
Have a great Easter. We'll be back. It's the Dale Jackson Show, live and local, News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Depend on it.
From the First Family Mortgage One.